Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everyone, where there's always more than one way to Mormon. I'm Stephen Carter, and I'll be introducing this episode. But first, I've got some big news. We just landed our Smith Pettit lecture. Now, this is a lecture that kicks off the symposium, where we bring in a high-profile non-Mormon that helps us to get a look at ourselves from the outside. You might remember that last year we brought in Leah Sotili, who had recently published a book on the Lori Vallow and Chad Dable murders. And this year, we're lucky enough to get the author of a New York Times best-selling book called Exvangelicals: Living, Loving, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. Now, her name is Sarah McCammon, and for the past decade or so, she's been a national correspondent for NPR. And she's been a guest host on every one of NPR's news magazine, and she was also a co-host for the NPR Politics podcast. Now, the reason we went after her is because we really feel like we need to talk about the intersection between religion and politics, especially with the rise of the MAGA movement. And that's actually a lot of what Sarah talks about in her book, how evangelicals became such a big part of MAGA. And of course, Mormonism has followed right along. So when I was reading Exvangelicals, I was astonished at how similar evangelical culture is to Mormon culture. It was like she lived in a parallel universe to ours. The only difference was like they spoke in tongues. And one of the main questions that she asks is, how did a bunch of nice people become so politically radicalized? So she's going to come help us see ourselves by showing us how this parallel culture has changed to become what it is. So, you know, maybe the title of her talk could be something like, Why Are Mormons Going MAGA? And of course, that's just the beginning of what's going to be a great symposium. We're going to be focusing on the things that people have made out of Mormonism, you know, from movies to books to apps. I'm going to see if we can do showings of old silent films, you know, like Trapped by the Mormons, A Victim of the Mormons, and A Mormon Maid. They are all awful and awfully entertaining. And we'll have some interesting Mormon artifacts on display as well. And happily, there's still time for you to submit a session proposal. You've got till April 11th. So just head over to sunstone.org and you'll see a link to it. In fact, I'm thinking about doing a session on the weird stuff that early church magazines advertised. Now, speaking of things that people make out of Mormonism, today's episode is about how some Italian comic book creators used Mormonism in a comic series called Tex. The title of the article, which appears in the latest issue of Sunstone, is The Mormons Are Not All Fanatics, The Mormon Image in Tex, Italy's Most Popular Comic Series, written by Michael Homer. And now, Michael Homer is a lawyer who served as honorary Italian consul in Utah from 2008 to 2025. And in 2020, Sergio Mattarella, president of the Republic of Italy, conferred on him the Knight of the Order of the Star of Italy. This article was originally presented at the 2024 Center for Studies of New Religions conference in Bordeaux, France. In 1948, Giovanni Luigi Bonelli and Aurelio Gallipini introduced a new comic strip in Italy entitled Tex. It was about Tex Willer, a Texas Ranger and chief of a Navajo group. He was portrayed traveling throughout the American West with his son Kit Willer, aka Little Hawk, and his old pard Kit Carson. Since Tex's first appearance, he has become the most popular comic book character in Italy. The stories adhere to the classical plot, identified by Will Wright, in which a, quote, hero of exceptional ability enters a social group from the outside, a society being threatened by villains whose strength exceeds their own, defeats the villains, and makes the society safe, unquote. Plus, plenty of obligatory gunfighting. Bonelli and Gallipini eventually collaborated on stories in which Tex encountered Mormons in Utah Territory. Tex and his pards are outsiders, wearing white hats, rescuing non-Mormons or Gentile victims from Mormon villains. The stories included the usual Mormon themes, such as polygamy, women who feel trapped and cannot leave the territory, and the culture of violence. The Mormon Image in Italy. By reading the travelogues of Italian writers who had visited Utah, Italian readers had become familiar with a Mormon image that focused on Brigham Young, polygamy, and violence. But Arthur Conan Doyle's first Sherlock Holmes story, A Study in Scarlet, had the greatest impact on that image. The story focused on Brigham Young's insistence that a young girl marry into polygamy. When her father resists and tries to escape the territory, the Danites, a secret band of assassins, kill him and force his daughter into a polygamous marriage. A similar image was presented in the dime novels of Buffalo Bill, who brought his Wild West show to Italy in 1886 and 1898. In one of these stories, Buffalo Bill claimed he was present during the Mountain Meadows Massacre and was able to rescue some of the survivors. Emilio Salgari, one of Italy's most prolific and widely read adventure writers, attended Buffalo Bill's Wild West show and wrote three stories about Mormons that included violence and massacres. Although the Sherlock Holmes canon was banned during the Mussolini dictatorship, a new edition of A Study in Scarlet appeared in 1949. The first comic book adaptations of A Study in Scarlet appeared in 1947 and 1953. In 1955, a Fotoromanzo comic book was released using frames from the movie Brigham Young from 1940 that had been released in Italy as La Grande Missione in 1955. Then, the movie Wagon Master from 1950 was released in Italy in 1961 as La Caravana dei Mormoni. Tex in Utah. Oddly enough, the first three stories Bonelli wrote that took place in Utah did not feature Mormons as antagonists. In Aventura nel Utah, Tex receives a letter from Kit Carson asking for help to determine who was attempting to take over the Bar T Ranch. Tex discovers their identities, but none of them are Mormon. In La Banda de Mormoni, the victims of a robbery that took place in Utah believe the bandits were Mormon missionaries because of their dress. Tex and Kit Carson locate the gang's lair at the Great American Circus, discovering that the criminals are not Mormons. In Terra Promessa, a caravan of wagons passing through Cedar City, Utah, near where the Mountain Meadows Massacre took place, is targeted by local settlers. The locals are never identified as Mormons, and the immigrants are Quakers, whose dress is very similar to the Mormons. Tex among the Mormons. However, there are at least five Tex stories in which our hero encounters antagonistic Mormons. In La Croce Tragica, the story begins when Tex and his companions observe Danites, Mormon assassins, killing a Gentile, non-Mormon, by tying him to a cross and leaving him in the desert to die. Tex rides into a village where the Gentiles had settled 2 years earlier and learns that the Mormons stole their cattle and other property and demanded that they leave. Tex promises that he and his men will track down the Danites, assuring his companions that, quote, not all Mormons are fanatics, unquote. He enters the Mormon settlement of Tidwell and meets the local Mormon bishop. The bishop denies knowing the identities of the Danites, but agrees that if Tex and his pards track them down, he will bring them to justice in the courts. Tex and his pards travel to the ranch of Sam Sharp, a polygamist and Danite. Sarah, one of Sharp's plural wives, and her daughter Lisa live at the ranch. Sam has promised another Danite, Dean Fish, that he can marry Lisa as a plural wife. Sarah sneaks a note into Tex's boot, writing that she regrets her marriage to Sharp and asking Tex to help Lisa in her escape. Tex returns to the ranch and rescues Sarah and Lisa, but the Danites recapture them. So he rescues Sarah and Lisa again and arrests Fish. Tex delivers Fish to the Mormon bishop, who assembles a council of elders for a trial. Tex recovers the money the Danites had stolen from the Gentiles and returns it to them so that they can rebuild their village. In La Grande Minichia and Il Vendicatore Mascherato, two Mormon leaders in Cedar City are murdered by someone who leaves signs with the words Mountain Meadows Massacre inscribed on them. Tex comes in to solve the killings. He questions Moses Boglum, the leader of Cedar City, who penitently admits to Tex that he was one of the four people responsible for organizing the Mountain Meadows Massacre, where more than 100 members of a wagon train were killed. They only spared small children who could not tell tales. His rationale? Quote, "We must give a demonstration of force that will serve as a lesson to everyone who immigrates to the West. It will not be a massacre, but a sacrifice. The sacrifice of a few will save many lives in the future. It is a tough choice, but the story of men is full of these types of stories." Unquote. Boglum is likely next to be killed, so Tex convinces Boglum to act as bait so that he can capture the murderer. Tex also speaks with Alvin Webb, who was a museum curator and one of the child survivors of the massacre. He is horrified by the violence perpetrated by his church brothers. As it turns out, he had taken partial revenge by murdering two of its planners, and Webb indeed has Boglum on his kill list. Tex follows Webb to the Mountain Meadows Cemetery, where Webb tells Tex, quote, "I hate the Mormons with their ostentatious meekness. I would like to eliminate them altogether from the face of the earth," unquote. Webb and Tex have a shootout, and Webb loses. Boglum arrives at the cemetery just after Webb dies. He is no longer penitent and tries to kill Tex, but Tex prevails and Boglum dies. When Tex is reunited with his pards, he expresses his disgust. Quote, "Ugh, what a damn dirty story. Let's take a breather for a moment and then return to Cedar City. If they want to bring their champions home, the respectable Mormon brothers will have to get their hands dirty." Unquote. In Los Yamano Bianco, Tex and Tiger Jack are tracking Roy Harper, a criminal with a violent backstory. His father, David Harper, was a Mormon. His mother, Kimowa, was a member of the Shoshone Indian tribe who had married David polygamously. But she went back to her people with the infant Roy after being harassed by David's other wives. With the help of some other Mormons, David found and killed Kimowa along with some other Native Americans. Only Roy was spared. He was taken back to David's community, where he was educated according to the Mormon religion. When Roy turned 18, he went on a mission where he became a master manipulator. When he returned home, he killed his father and his four wives and started wandering the West, posing as a preacher. He gained the trust of the children of Jeremy Ross, a childhood friend of Tex, and destroyed his family. Tex discovers that Roy is using the name Shenandoah and dressing as a shaman in the Snake Tribe. He has told them how to extract gold from a rich vein on the reservation, which he is planning to use to fund his own foul deeds. Roy captures Tex and tortures him before Tex is rescued, and engages in a duel to the death with Roy, avenging his many murders. These stories focused on the conflict between Gentiles as heroes and Mormons as villains. But they shouldn't be classified as anti-Mormon because they also distinguish between good Mormons and bad Mormons. In La Croce Tragica, Tex acknowledges that not all members of the faith are fanatics and that the Danites were bad Mormons. In La Croce Tragica, Tex acknowledges that not all members of the faith are fanatics and that the Danites were bad Mormons. In La Grande Minichia and Il Vendicatore Macerato, the villain Moses Boglum is a bad Mormon, and in Los Yamano Bianco, the villain has left Mormonism. The New Mormon Image. The most recent stories about Tex Willer's encounters with the Mormons change direction completely. Mormons become heroes and Gentiles villains. In Paradise Valley and Le Chiave de la Montaña, Tex is staying in Utah with a Mormon family named Greenfield when their son Jonah is accused of killing a Mormon couple and kidnapping their daughter. But someone tells the sheriff that the Humbert gang, Mormon apostates, had actually killed the Merrills. Their goal was to kidnap the Merrill's daughter in order to marry her off, along with another girl, to one of their sons. The Humberts had left the Mormon settlement after the father lost a leadership contest. Tex proposes to go to the Humbert's hideout to find the Merrill's daughter. Jonah accompanies Tex. He finds the Merrill's daughter and the other female prisoner, liberates them, and waits for Tex to arrive. This leads to a scene where the Humberts, both husband and wife, attempt to kill Tex, the sheriff, Jonah, and the two girls. But Tex triumphs. In La Leyenda de Porta Rockwell, the twist is that Sal Velluto, the illustrator, is a Mormon who converted in Italy before relocating to Utah. He has illustrated other publications about Mormon history, including a two-volume story about Mormon founder Joseph Smith, entitled Pillar of Light. In July 2019, Sal Velluto approached Tex editor Mauro Boselli with several proposals for a new story set in Utah. Boselli assigned the script to Pascal Rougeau, who collaborated with Velluto on a story centered on Porter Rockwell, set in Lehi, Utah, in 1870. Rockwell was one of Joseph Smith's bodyguards. According to legend, Smith bestowed upon him a blessing, promising that, as long as Rockwell remained loyal to the faith and did not cut his hair, he would have no reason to fear, since neither bullet nor blade could harm him. Both this blessing and the figure of Joseph Smith, never before graphically represented in a mainstream comic book, were incorporated into the story. Following Smith's assassination, Rockwell settled in the Utah Territory, where he became a polygamist and a deputy marshal. He confronted Gentiles and apostates, whom he considered to be enemies of the church, and became a very controversial figure in Mormon history. Many 19th century accounts describe Rockwell as an assassin, the destroying angel of Mormonism. However, French traveler Jules Remy described him as, quote, extremely amiable and polite, with exceedingly distinguished and graceful manners, unquote. He then noted that, quote, Rockwell is incapable of doing wrong, except under the impression that he is doing right, and that he would trust him with life and property without hesitation, unquote. But Remy also recognized that Rockwell was, quote, ever at hand when there is perilous service to be accomplished, a crime to be avenged, a sacrifice to be made, which can be of advantage to the oppressed, unquote. However, Richard Francis Burton, an even more famous British traveler, wrote that Rockwell, quote, had the manner of a jovial, reckless, devil-may-care English ruffian, unquote. In the story, Rockwell encounters Tex in a Lehi, Utah saloon. After offering Tex a glass of the poison of his choice, whiskey, Rockwell tells Tex that he only drinks lemonade because Mormons do not drink alcohol. This inaccuracy was probably introduced because Rougeau and Velluto wanted to acknowledge that present-day Mormons do not consume alcohol, but Rockwell and many other Mormons during the 19th century were well-known imbibers. Remy remarks that the Mormons who accompanied him when he departed from the territory, which included Rockwell, quote, brought with them a gallon of whiskey, unquote. Burton describes them consuming at least four square drinks with Rockwell while they were sitting around a campfire during his departure from the territory. Rougeau and Velluto relied on contemporary authors who lionized Rockwell and included two stories from these and other sources. In the first, which took place on the 4th of May, 1870, Rockwell shoots to death the notorious murderer Albert H. Hawes, who had killed a U.S. Marshal. The second story is about a gunfight Rockwell had with a young outlaw named Lauren Dibble, whom Rockwell spared because he was the son of a close friend. Both these outlaws and many others, as Rockwell recounts to Tex while drinking at the saloon, had tried to kill the man who cannot die. Afterward, Tex informs Rockwell that a large posse led by a Gentile named Brad Hanover is approaching Lehi to kill Rockwell. Together, Tex and Rockwell defeat the Hanover gang. During the gunfight, Tex saves Rockwell's life, thus preserving the legend of his invulnerability. Conclusion. The Mormon image in Tex stories has drastically improved since their first appearance in La Croce Tragica. In fact, Rockwell is portrayed as being as heroic as Tex in his latest story. In the last panel, a caption explains that Rockwell died of natural causes because of Joseph Smith's blessing, and notes that a statue in Lehi, Utah is dedicated to Rockwell. The Mormons whom Tex encounters in his latest adventure represent a 21st century Mormon worldview, one that opposes polygamy, eschews alcohol, and, although still clannish, easily mingles with outsiders. In this latest story, Tex comes to terms with this new image of Mormonism. Well, thanks for joining me on that Italian trip into Utah territory. If you subscribe to Sunstone, you'll get to see the covers for these various stories, all of which are very dramatic and often include at least one person on the brink of death. And a bit of trivia, Sal Velluto did the cover illustration for issue 160 of Sunstone. That was our famous comics issue, which included a further ranging article from Michael Homer about the Mormon image in popular comics generally. And it included a Godzilla comic, where Temple Square did not escape unscathed. All right, so remember to send in your submissions for the Summer Symposium, and I will talk with you again next time.